How do you do? One of the most beloved and inspirational women of the 20th century, Helen Keller, was blind and deaf and mute. And yet she wrote these words, "I can see." And that is why I can be so happy in what you call the dark, but which to me is golden. I can see a God-made world, not a man-made world. Today you will meet someone who for many years lived in the man-made world and saw that it was ugly. Only when he became scarred and blind did he see God's world because his heart and mind and life were unshackled. Lighting the darkness with true stories of real people, this is Unshackled, produced in Chicago by Pacific Garden Mission. Since 1877, Pacific Garden Mission has kept its doors open through time of war and peace, depression and boom, flood and fire. And despite the changes occurring in the world around it, the old lighthouse has remained a haven for the disadvantaged of all races and genders and generations. It offers food, clothing, and a safe place to sleep to those without. But most importantly, it offers hope to any that will listen to the eternal message of mercy, grace, and forgiveness of God. Many of those who do listen believe and go back out to encourage others, sharing the joy and peace they have found, like the man in this story. And now for broadcast around the earth, here's program number 2547. The true story of Earl Franklin Buck, retold from the classic files of Unshackled, the program that makes you face yourself and think. When Earl Buck was only 5 years old, he had an opportunity to learn a lesson that probably should have stayed with him all of his life. It happened when he was run over by a horse-drawn delivery wagon and badly hurt. It revealed the steadying strength of his father, and the weakness of some other men.
Take it as easy as you can, son. Mama's gone for the doctor. They ought to be back here most any minute.
But it's bleeding, Daddy. My head's all bloody.
Yeah, it's bleeding some, I'll grant you. Here, son, I'll wash it off again.
That's cold.
Oh, I know it'll help stop the bleeding. Come in, doctor. Come right in.
Well, what seems to be the problem, Reverend?
As you can see, my boy's hurt his head.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't my wife come back with you?
Well, she's outside putting up my horse. Maybe she'd rather not watch us work. Any other injuries besides the head?
Well, I've looked them over pretty carefully. I can't find any others.
Well, the two cuts here are bad enough.
And it hurts a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Son, doctor, where did my wife find you?
Why, it so happened I'd stopped into Cassidy's.
That's what I thought.
Well, you know what they say, Reverend. The wages of gin is breath.
Do they, doctor? I'd say the original quotation is more to the point.
Yes, quite so. Well, you seem to have done an excellent job of cleansing the wounds. Nothing left for me to do but sew them up. Let's see. Sutures. Yes, just so. Now, if I can just manage to...
Your hands aren't very steady, doctor.
Yeah, you're right. I was just noticing the same thing.
More of the wages of gin, I take it?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You understand, doctor, that this is my son, and I love him. I don't want to see him mutilated.
Naturally.
Well?
Well, Reverend Buck, the truth of the matter is I'm in no condition to make the stitches.
Thank you, doctor. I appreciate your honesty, at least. Now then, you can tell me how to do it, can't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, give me the needle and the suture.
Well, have you the courage?
I know where to find it.
Well, Reverend, what are you waiting for?
I wasn't waiting, doctor. I was asking God to guide my hand and give me courage.
That's fine, Reverend Buck. Well done. A surgeon couldn't have done better. Not even a sober surgeon.
Is that all, Daddy?
Yes, yes, son, that's all. I'll send your mother in to sit with you. Well, Doctor, you ready to go?
All packed up, yes.
Well, then. I hope for the sake of your next patient that you're not planning to go back to the saloon.
So do I, Reverend. So do I.
What do I owe you?
Under the circumstances, sir, nothing at all. Not a cent.
I never forgot that incident from my childhood. But I didn't profit by the lesson I should have learned. In fact, the record shows that for about half a century, I didn't profit in any way by much of anything. I suppose the trouble really started when I was 13. My father died, and in trying to deal with her loss, my mother gave me more freedom than I was able to manage. I got to running with the wrong crowd and staying out late at night. Then I became a double dropout. I dropped out of Sunday school and public school at about the same time. Mother sent me to live with my older brother Charlie on his farm. Well, there I went to school again and stayed for about a year. After that, I was sent to live with another brother, Will, in Kansas City. I stayed there long enough to finish grade school, and then a couple of years later, when I was 17, I joined the Army. The year was 1920. My original enlistment was for 1 year. When that year ended, I decided to re-enlist.
Well, Buck, the first sergeant tells me you've decided to re-up.
Yes, sir.
It'll be for 3 years, you know.
Yes, sir.
Buck, I'm not the chaplain. But as your company commander, I think I ought to point out something to you.
Yes, sir?
You've stood 11 pay formations with this outfit, and you've been falling down drunk 11 times. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
You've been lucky so far. It hasn't gotten you into any serious trouble. But I doubt very much that you repeat the performance 37 more times and stay lucky.
Yes, sir. I hope so, sir.
You mean you hope you could get drunk on 37 more paydays and still manage to stay out of the stockade?
Well, sir, I...
Don't look for any special favors from me, Buck. You won't get them. Understand?
Yes, sir. I understand, sir.
All right. Your application for reenlistment is approved. Sergeant Callahan has the papers all made up. You can sign them on the way out.
The captain was right. 37 paydays, 37 drunks. And as many as I could manage in between paydays, as luck allowed it. By the time I was discharged in 1924, I was a fully developed boozer. I had a drinking pattern that was just as regular in civilian life as it had been in the Army. The only difference was that the paydays came around more often, and there was a lot more money to drink up. In Kansas City, I was employed by the Railway Express Company, but I really worked for the saloon keepers. My brother and sister, who also lived in Kansas City, tried to help me.
Will and I are worried about you, Earl.
No reason to worry. I've told you 100 times. I'm okay.
But you're spending all your time and money in the saloons. Mm. You know, this would break Dad's heart. I mean, what would he think? Or Mother, if she knew.
All right.
And what about God? Earl, won't you come to church with us this Sunday?
Thanks, but no thanks. I've told you there's nothing there for me. By the way, I'm thinking about quitting my job and going up to Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, Earl, a new city isn't the answer. You can't run from yourself. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 13 says, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy."
Well, I moved to Omaha and went to work for the railroad until I was fired in 1930 for drinking. The Great Depression had just hit the country. In those days, thousands and thousands of people were drifting back and forth across the country, looking for work. All it took was a rumor of work somewhere to send a human tide sweeping across the country. And I became part of it. Following construction jobs, I traveled by freight train through the South, and then east to New York. There were so many of us on the road in those days that the railroads pretty much gave up trying to keep us off the trains.
I remember one terrible ride in an empty boxcar. The temperature was about 10 below zero. There were some 30 men in the car. 30 men and one woman with a year-old baby.
Buddy, I don't know about you, but I can't take it much longer.
You mean, brother?
No, I mean watching that woman and her baby freeze to death.
I know. I've been thinking the same thing. I've got to do something about it. Let's talk to
him. Okay. You do the talking. Come on.
Excuse me, ma'am.
What is it, mister?
Nothing. I was wondering, is there anything we can do to help you?
I don't know what. It's just as cold for you as it is for me and the baby.
It's none of my business, but you shouldn't be traveling this way.
I don't have much choice. My husband went all the way to Buffalo to find a job. Then he got hurt. I got the telegram yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's hard to take.
I just have to get to him. What if he dies?
All right, then you had to make the trip. But, ma'am, you're not dressed for this kind of weather. Who is the baby?
We're wearing everything we own.
Well, I guess that settles.
Yeah, sure does, ma'am. I'll just take a few things out of my coat pockets. Then you can wear the coat.
I can't take your coat.
Oh, you've got to. There's no two ways about it.
Please.
Here's my coat, too, ma'am. It's dirty, but it's all one piece. Wrap the baby up in it.
You'll freeze to death.
Well, I doubt it, but if somebody's going to freeze, it better not be the baby.
And it better not be you, either. That baby needs you. Here.
What can I say? Thank you.
Hey, guys, mind if I have my overcoat? It's a long one. Makes a pretty good blanket.
You don't know. Y'all just don't know.
Oh, forget it, ma'am. Get that kid warmed up. Maybe he'll go to sleep.
Well, what do we do to keep warm? Calisthenics?
Maybe. But right now, I got something better. That's what I was taking out of my coat.
Well, what is it?
I've been keeping this little jug of whiskey for an emergency. I reckon this is it.
It's emergency enough for me.
I'll come on over in the corner. I'm just letting everybody see the bottle. Hardly enough for the two of us. What with the weather and all.
Anything left in that jug?
Well, enough for one more slug of peace.
Funny thing, with all this booze in me, I still freeze to death.
Me too. Notice the baby's comfortable, though.
Yeah, he'd tell myself it's worth it.
Yeah, me too. I keep asking myself, what am I doing here?
I don't have to ask. I know. I'm paying the price for about a dozen wasted years. Years when I thought I was smarter than God.
God, you say, listen, pal, if God was so good, he wouldn't let things like this happen.
Maybe you can say that and mean it. I can't. One thing I can't ever do, that's blame God for my trouble. What I've got, I ask for. I've paid hard cash for it. One drink at a time. You see, even when things were at their worst, I knew that it was me who had turned my back on God and not the other way around. Well, I got through that boxcar ride somehow, but it didn't change me. I went right on the same old way. It's a funny thing. A man can be wrong, can know he's wrong, and still go right ahead and be even more wrong.
Just how wrong did Earl Buck get? You'll hear about it in just a minute. Letters from listeners make our day. Listen to these excerpts and you'll see why. I found your program at a time in my life when my whole world fell apart. That was 3 years ago, and I have rebuilt my life thanks to Jesus Christ, who is my Savior. He used your program as part of the healing process. And this Jewish believer writes, I currently live in Japan and praise God that I can listen to your program on the Internet. Hearing the testimonies of people that have come from crazy backgrounds has cemented my faith tremendously. Please keep up the good work. This man writes, I have been very encouraged by the Unshackled stories. They help me see that I'm not alone in the struggle, even though it often feels like it. And this man in North Carolina says, Unshackled stories are not only a help to the sinner searching for hope, but an instruction to Christians to seek the Lord's will in their own lives. The program also has given many ideas on witnessing to different types of people. We'd like to hear how this program impacts your life, so please write soon. The address is simply Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. Email can be sent to unshackled@pgm.org. Our website address is www.unshackled.org.
I really never did blame God for my troubles. That's about the only good thing you could say about the man I was in those days. Only once for a short time I held a job without drinking. That was in South Chicago, but it didn't last. I quit, went to Dubuque, Iowa, where I got into serious trouble. It was still prohibition time, and I got mixed up in the liquor racket. Had a place where I was bootlegging liquor. I stayed ahead of the law for a couple of years, but then I was finally caught and sentenced to 4 months in the county jail. When I got out, I heard about the big construction job being done on the Fort Peck Dam in Montana. I went there, got a job, and worked all summer. But when the winter closed in, it stopped most of the work. I spent the winter in Great Falls. I got a room just above a saloon, and you can imagine how that worked out. To give you an idea, I used to wake up every morning with a pretty fair case of the shakes. But I knew that all I had to do was get myself safely down the stairs to get straightened out.
Morning, partner. Welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Oh, thanks. Never mind the cheerful chatter. Just bring me a drink before my teeth shake right out on the bar.
The usual?
Oh, do I look like a guy in the mood to experiment? Hurry up.
Maybe I'd better pour, huh?
Oh, you know what, my hand's shaking so bad, I'll be lucky to get it to my mouth.
There you go, sport, old dog hair. Surest cure in the world for the shookies. 8 months old.
Well, that's 7 months and 29 days older than what I used to sell in Dubuque.
One of the many blessings of repeal. That and labels on the bottle.
Yeah, but I noticed the hangovers are about the same.
I wouldn't know. Never touch them myself. Drink it down.
Yeah. Great.
Another one? First two drinks of the day around the house, you know.
Nothing like priming the pump. I don't know how you can afford it.
Never mind the wisecracks. You want the drink or don't you?
Don't ask foolish questions. Just pour. I worked 2 summers on the Fort Peck Dam and spent 2 winters in that Great Falls saloon with a little time out for sleep in my room overhead. From there, I moved on to Spokane, Washington, with the idea of working on the Grand Coulee Dam, but ended up hanging around on Skid Row. It was there that I got involved in one brawl that left me with a face so badly cut up that I wound up in the hospital. There was infection in the wound. As a result, all the stitches broke open, and I was left with a deep, ugly scar on my face to match the scar on my soul. And the cause of both scars was sin. I guess my next job was the longest I ever held in my life. It was on a sheep ranch, and I stayed 12 years working the sheep in the summer and drinking in town all winter. Summers were good. I was away from the saloon and out in the mountains. Much of the time I was alone, except for the white-faced sheep and the dog. Taking it easy, watching the sheep work their way up the slopes, I'd get to thinking of things that hadn't crossed my mind in years. Things I'd learned in Sunday school and at home from my preacher dad.
Earl, today in Sunday school you studied the 23rd Psalm. Well, back when King David wrote that, he was remembering his youth when he was actually a shepherd boy tending to his flock of sheep. So he knew from experience how to lead them and where to lead them. And in those days, there were many shepherds with their own flocks, and many of them came together in one place to drink of the still waters and eat in the green pastures. And then, when they were ready to move on, each shepherd would stand up on a rock or a high place and call out to his flock of sheep. And believe it or not, each sheep and lamb knew the sound of their shepherd's voice and would come out from all the others and follow him. That's what the Lord Jesus means when he says in John chapter 10, verses 3 and 4, "And the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." And in verse 14, Jesus goes on to say, I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine.
I watched my flock climbing the hill, the little lambs jumping straight up as though they had springs in their legs just because they were glad to be alive. I knew I certainly wasn't a good shepherd, even if I was a sober one. Eventually, that ranch sold all its sheep, and I moved on to a sheep ranch in Montana. Early in the spring, I moved out with a big flock, and a late snowstorm caught us in the open. Then the sun came out in the middle of the day. The glare off the snow was so strong it blistered my face and damaged my eyes. Within months, my vision was so bad that I had to cut my job. I went to Spokane to see an eye specialist. He had diagnosed my trouble at once.
Now, just make yourself comfortable, Mr. Buck, while I call the hospital. Hello, this is Dr. Conroy. Yes, look, I'm sending a patient over there right now. His name's Buck, Earl Buck. I have him ready for surgery in the morning. Yeah, he's fine. What? Oh, it's glaucoma, right eye, yes. Oh, it's definitely, it's an emergency.
The operation was performed on my right eye, then my left eye became involved. I was in great pain and almost blind. After 3 weeks in the hospital, I was moved to a nursing home. I was a wreck as a result of the heavy doses of pain-killing injections. After I'd been in the nursing home for about a month, I became totally blind. Now, at last, I was forced to sit perfectly still and think. And that was something I believe I had been deliberately avoiding for years. One of the things that came to me very strongly and painfully was the fact that not once in all those years had I ever written to my relatives. I knew that my mother had died in 1934, or 15 years earlier. Other than that, I knew nothing of my brothers and sister, and they knew nothing about me. The next time a nurse came to help me, I asked her how a person in my condition went about writing a letter.
Oh, it's quite simple. You just dictate it to me, and I'll write it for you. That is, if you're willing to trust me to serve as your secretary.
Oh, I trust you, ma'am. Anyway, there's nothing going in my letters. You couldn't yell all over the building. But I don't want to give you too much extra work to do.
Oh, don't you worry about that. That's what I'm here for, to be helpful. I'll come back in about an hour. By then you'll have had time to plan what you want to say in your letter.
That's how it happened that I got word to my sister where I was. Now, she had never been in Spokane in her life, but she knew some Christian people there and wrote to them. I found out about it a few days later.
Well, Mr. Buck, we'd better take a minute to make you look your best. You have a visitor.
Me? Oh, not a chance. The only people I know in Spokane are so ragged and drunk that the only way they'd come into a place like this is feet first.
Well, don't you know a minister named Schaefer?
Never heard of him.
Well, he's heard of you, and he's here to see you.
Imagine a preacher coming to see me. Well, might as well ask him in. Turned out, of course, that my sister had written to him. I knew without being told that her greatest concern was for me to receive Christ, and the preacher didn't waste any time getting right to the point.
According to your sister, you come from a Christian family, Earl.
That's right. My dad was a preacher, a good one, too. I'm the only one who ran wild and stayed a rebel against God.
I'm glad you said stayed a rebel against God, because we've all been that kind of a rebel until we were ready to receive Christ. But once a rebel doesn't have to mean always a rebel.
I'm afraid I've been one for a long time, preacher.
Well, that makes no difference. You remember the story of the prodigal son?
Oh, of course. I used to cry in the sad parts when my dad preached on it.
Well, let's read it again, Earl. Here in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. Beginning with verse 20. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Now, Earl, why don't you come home right now?
I want to, preacher. More than anything, I want to.
He's waiting for you. What are you waiting for?
I'm not waiting, preacher. Not anymore. I haven't prayed but once or twice in all these years, but back when I was a boy, I used to kneel down, and we all did, at prayer meetings when my dad was alive. I'd like to do that now, to kneel down before we talk to the Lord. Well, that's how this prodigal came home after almost half a century of living on husks and living like swine. In spite of all the wasted years, when I made the decision to return to my Heavenly Father, He did come to meet me and engulfed me in His everlasting arms. And it was then I knew that I was far more blind in my old life. But where there was darkness, now there's light. John chapter 1, verse 9 says about Jesus, "That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world."
Earl Buck was helped by his sister to find a congenial surrounding at a Bible conference ranch in Upper Lake, California. There, surrounded by loving friends, meeting missionaries and other visitors from all over the world, he became affectionately known as Uncle Earl. Several years ago, the Good Shepherd led Uncle Earl to his own green pastures and still waters. And the man whose face was scarred and whose eyes were sightless, but whose soul had been healed of its wounds, knew better than most that if your life is empty, it can be filled to overflowing. Listening friend, if you would like to experience this overflowing life, just contact Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago, and we will send you some literature to help guide you on your way home. Our mailing address is Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. The email address is unshackled@pgm.org. And visit us on our website at www.unshackled.org. If you enjoy and benefit from listening to these true stories of real people, you can help keep Unshackled on the air in your area by contacting the manager of this station. Just a note to say simply, thanks for Unshackled. This is program number 2547. Unshackled is produced by Pacific Garden Mission to show through true stories that if your life is empty, it can be filled to overflowing. We really do appreciate hearing from you, so write soon, Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. If you are in need of counseling and spiritual help, you may call Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago and talk with someone who cares. Area 312-922-1462. Someone is waiting for your call. 312-922-1462.